Hello and welcome to Vista Talks, interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. I'm your host for today, Simon Hodgkins, and I'm delighted to be joined by Maciek Kranz. Maciek, you're very welcome to Vista Talks. I want to start because you've got a very interesting role. You have a great career journey, and the organization that you work for is known all around the world. So can I ask you maybe to tell our worldwide audience a little bit about who you are, your journey, and this wonderful organization that spans the world and everything that you do there. So over to you, Maciek.
Perfect. Thank you, Simon, and thank you so much for having me over. Some of you can probably tell, I'm Polish originally, moved to the US when I was in my early 20s. I worked most of my life in San Francisco Bay, the Bay Area, so-called Silicon Valley. And I will really, showcase my age now because I started before internet was commercialized. So I worked for a company called 3Com, then a couple of startups, then Cisco. So we've built the backbone of internet. And in that process, I also worked a lot with industrial companies on digital transformation and IoT, Internet of Things. And 4 years ago, I've decided to roll up my sleeves and move from the Bay Area to Finland. We are here in Espoo, facing Helsinki. And I joined Kone to lead their technology organization. And it's been a blast.
Well, Conair is well known because the organization itself, I think it touches most people's lives at some mm-hmm. stage, right? But just to give people a little bit of context, I mean, at this stage, it's in 60 countries around the world, right? There's 60,000 employees. I think you did almost 11 billion in sales last year alone, you know, mm-hmm. which is an incredible success story of an organization. And I know it's listed on the NASDAQ, and I know you're heading off back to the Bay very, very shortly.
Yep.
You know, for a Finnish organization, it truly is a world-class organization, isn't it?
It is, and thank you for mentioning some of our stats. It actually is remarkable. You know, we pride ourselves on moving 1 billion people every day, which is quite incredible. Like 1 billion people basically use our assets to move around buildings, neighborhoods, cities every day. And when you think about our company, we basically traditionally, we have 123 years to be exact of history. And traditionally we've been obviously manufacturing elevators, escalators, doors, turnstiles. But over the last decade or maybe a little bit more, we started focusing on this mission of improving the flow of urban life. So how do we allow or enable people to move around buildings, neighborhoods, and cities with smiles on their faces, right? So that you don't get stuck in the waiting for elevator for 10 minutes. That that everybody can move in a sort of smooth way from one destination to another. And this type of challenge has been actually quite interesting for us. You know, when the pandemic started, one of the biggest requests that we've been getting from our customers was, all right, so now, Connor, can you help us figure out how do we help people to move, let's say, from parking lot to their apartment or to their office building? In Connor, we've started coming back to the office, and we worked in the office since May 2020. So how do you do this? How do you do this in a safe way, in a timely way, with minimizing sort of interaction with the infrastructure? So we started developing these types of solutions with our customers and for our customers. And to do that, we also realized very quickly that even though we are sort of traditionally a very proud engineering organization, we need to work with the ecosystem. So like in this case, if you think about the typical journey from a parking lot or a train station to your apartment or the office, there's roughly nine different types of partners that we need to integrate to create this whole experience, right? So, and of course, you can talk about APIs and everything else, but how do you now shift organization that is used to building everything themselves into the organization that is now focusing on experiences and solutions and working with partners and customers? And that's been an amazing journey, but very humbling and satisfying journey for us as well.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, the numbers that you're sharing there in terms of the amount of people that you move every day, it's astonishing. And mm-hmm. I really like the urban flow, you know, that you're improving this urban flow. Because when it comes to the built environment in various locations around the world, it takes an awful lot of smart thinking and smart planning to be able to do that. And I know you guys work through something called people flow, don't you, where you sort of Correct. Analyze how that works to the nth degree.
Yeah, and I think that's where basically data comes into play, right? So we, and that's sort of when you think about sort of this Internet of Things phenomenon, we kind of fully embraced it, right? So we deploy sensors around the world and of course collect the data and we analyze the data so that we can improve the people, but also material flow, right? So because at the end of the day, we kind of crossed this threshold probably a year ago when like over half of population on Earth now lives in urban areas, right? And of course, these numbers will be increasing. I think by the end of this decade, another 1 billion people will move to the cities, right? So from that perspective, when you think about it, we have an opportunity so that everybody, every person around the world can move around these cities with smiles on their faces, right? And because it's all of us, right? I mean, we live in this environment, and would it be nice if we didn't have to stay in traffic? We didn't have to wait for things, that things will just happen. And that's where the technology and where the sensors, where the data can help, right? Because we can start to orchestrate things. So, and I can give you one example of some types of solutions. For example, if I go to a high-rise building where, let's say, KONE office is located, my phone and my app would be able to interact with the infrastructure, and the building infrastructure would recognize me and say, okay, well, this is Maciek. He works for KONE, and he used to be, you know, come here a couple of times already, so we will give a fast lane to him so he can go through the turnstile. Welcome, Maciek. And by the way, Maciek, there's an elevator waiting for you. It's elevator C, because we also checked with your permission, of course, that your first meeting is on the 12th floor and we'll take you directly to the first floor, right? Technology exists where you can do these things today. And it would be nice if we could roll out these types of solutions for all of us so that we can enjoy the smooth people flow experiences, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and that, you know, hooking up that whole transportation logistics of moving humans around the planet, it's a fascinating subject. And look, you know, for everybody who's listening to us or watching us today, you know, you're the executive vice president and CTO. You're a member of the executive board at KONE Air Corporation. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you a little bit about what that's like in the context of something you said a moment ago. You mentioned all the different partners on the ground that you have to interact with when you're trying to move these people around. But you are also having to orchestrate with a huge global organization. So when it comes to leadership styles, when it comes to people management, when it comes to your own digital transformation as an organization, have you got any insights you can give us into how you go about that sort of from a day-to-day perspective, from your sort of viewpoint?
Simon, that's a great question. Thank you for that. And, you know, when we think about these experiences that we just discussed, we realized very quickly at KONE that we first needed to reinvent ourselves so that we are now capable of reinventing our experiences moving around buildings, neighborhoods, and cities. So from that perspective, you know, over the last two decades or so, I've been sort of perfecting this tool set of a change agent tool set, rather. And I've been using this tool set in sort of every one of my new roles. And the tool set is fairly straightforward. You know, you come to the organization, you need to sort of first of all prove yourself and build a foundation so that you have a sort of earned the right to be a change agent and the rule breaker. Then you work with the organization to set the North Star, right? And the North Star is something that all of us need to believe that this is something that a set of tenets and principles that we want to aspire to and work towards it. And then you start breaking the rules and one by one and transform ourselves. And that's what we've done. We've implemented Agile across hardware and software, which is quite remarkable. I'm especially proud of some of our leaders who, you know, many of them have been at KONE for 10, 20, 30 years. The courage that they had to sort of say, all right, there's been this tool set I had that made me successful, and I'm going to forget all of this, and I'm going to make a leap of faith and implement this new thing and reinvent myself in the process. And then once they've done that, they've also started working on reinventing the rest organization. We augmented our current skill sets with new skill sets. So now half of our engineering community are software engineers in addition to hardware engineers. We've hired an established architecture function, an architecture-first approach. APIs, we sort of borrowed with pride from Amazon, and we established API-first organization internally. And some of these APIs we externalize as well. We've hired a lot of new people with new domains in product management, in software, in architecture, blah, blah, blah. The bottom line is that we've created this organization where experts lead experts and where really everybody can grow, thrive, and innovate. So I'm very proud of this transformation. But in the process also, we've created an amazing roadmap of these types of experiences that we've discussed. And now I feel that we have the team that is sort of, you know, ready to conquer the moon, right? And we are conquering the moon.
That's great. Yeah, I like that. Can I ask you just one other question on that? Because you are creating these world-class teams. Mm-hmm. But obviously you work across many different geographies, many different cultures, many different languages. Yep. What is it like when you're working across that? Because there are challenges too to managing multicultural, multi-language teams globally.
Very much so. And, you know, it was also challenging because 6 months after I started at KONE, COVID hit, right? And we didn't travel for a while. Although during COVID, I spent 3 months in China. So it was a fascinating experience as well. But I think it starts with a mindset. Inclusion is really the foundation here, right? And of course, when you think about building a team, you build diverse teams. When we created these, as part of Agile, for example, we created these value streams or tribes. They were global, with people from 3 to 5, 6 or more locations, and obviously that looked very different, had different backgrounds. And we spent a lot of time making sure that we were sensitive to these differences. We embraced the differences, but at the same time, we built our own common culture across all of these diverse backgrounds and experiences. For example, I'm a global sponsor for LGBTIQ+. A resource group at KONE, right? And it was also a journey for us, right? In terms of different groups of people in different locations had different levels of understanding, involvement, or acceptance of what makes us special, which is basically what makes us different, right? But the point here is, if we set North Star, and then one of the North Stars was that we accept and we embrace everybody, whatever they bring to the to the work environment. And then you just practice and practice and practice, right? Anything that is positive, you reinforce. Anything that you see is a challenge, you immediately provide feedback, you try to correct. So act and iterate, act and learn, act and plan ahead, at least two or three steps ahead. One of the key elements of this culture is this disagree and commit concept, which I'm a big believer on, which is, you know, I tell people that I work with, we haven't arrived in sort of our relationships until we learn how to effectively argue with each other. Because that means there's trust, there's maturity of relationship, and we can focus on let's find out what the best decision ideas are, not just that this is your idea or my idea, right? So we really practice this disagree and commit. And I think it took a while for people to say, well, I can really argue with this guy. Can I? Oh, yeah, it looks like he wants to. And by the way, he argues back. So we practice that. But then we also practice that at some point after the spirited discussions, we pick the right route and we make a decision. And then we need to be unified around it as well. So there are a lot of cultural aspects that you have to invest in. And it's not just showing a beautiful PowerPoint with beautiful statements. Practicing it every day, walking the talk, that's what makes it real.
Thanks. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's great, just to get a little bit of insight into that, particularly from somebody that works across the globe in the way that you and your organization do. I want to change gear a little bit if I can while I've got some time with you today, because I want to talk about the Internet of Things. I want to talk about your book, and I also want to talk about the work that you're doing with Forbes. So could you maybe unpack that a little bit for our audience?
Yep. So Internet of Things, I hope nobody listening has not heard about Internet of Things by now. But it's been a crazy journey. So I think that term was coined 20 some years ago. I got involved in IoT in the context of sort of tech means industrial, probably 17 years ago, working with amazing companies like Rockwell and Johnson Controls and Honeywell and others. We started sort of by bringing industrial switching, sort of building industrial infrastructure networks and so forth. And then, of course, the world of sensors starting to show up as well. The fascinating journey for me was that with IoT, it wasn't just about technology or set of technologies, but about the creating the movement in the market, right? And that's how we approached it. I remember when I started running the Internet of Things business at Cisco 12 years ago, I guess, or 13 years ago. At that time, we knew that it wasn't just about technology, about applications, but about creating a movement in an industry where all of us, we talked about diversity, in this case is diversity of players, from application players to all the way to chip manufacturers, and from deep tech with analytics and AI to people that build power plants, right? All this ecosystem needed to start working together and agreeing on the basic models, on standards, and so forth. And at that time, I think IoT was listed twice on top of Gartner's magic quadrant, or hype curve rather. But the fun thing is that now IoT is absolutely real. When I wrote the book 6 or 7 years ago, the goal was to sort of say IoT is not just a bunch of buzzwords and a bunch of technologies. IoT can be transformative in terms of how you can build and accelerate and scale your businesses, right? And there was sort of a vacuum in the market. There wasn't sort of the book that kind of talked about that. But I was shocked to find out when the book became the New York Times bestseller. But now when I think about Kona, technology in many ways is easy. You can deploy it. We partner with AWS, with many other companies. But turning technology into business is still hard. Can I give you an example? We have this service called 24/7 connected services, where it's basically a set of offerings that focuses on preemptive maintenance. So we can anticipate, let's say, 70% of failures, and we can fix them before they occur. Traditionally, these types of capabilities companies have used primarily to just improve their own efficiency, their own capabilities. But we decided to package it and sell it to our customers. So we started to monetize it. And I can tell you, monetizing this type of technology is order of magnitude harder than just building it, right? And not just in terms of business model and go-to-market, but also the expectation from customers, right? In terms of, how robust this type of offering is. But now, we've been growing this service double digits, and it's actually starting to become a significant both revenue and profit contributor to Kona. And that's sort of for me the essence of it, is that IoT creates new value that customers are willing to pay for, and new value for customers so that they can actually offer additional capabilities to their customers. So that's sort of the dream come true.
Yeah, I really like that, because when I initially think of IoT, you think about this huge collection of data, or at least I do.
Yep.
But when you translate that into the value add for the end user, and how it can, like you were talking earlier, how it can that data can help you make the movement of people much easier, frictionless, much more convenient, much more knowledgeable in terms of getting me to the right elevator to hit the right floor at the right time. That sort of seamless integration of networks through this IoT infrastructure, I think we're only beginning to see that really taking shape now. And I mean, it's great that it became a New York Times bestseller, because this world of interconnected devices, it's only really getting started, even though it's been around quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Very, very much so. And I think that technology-wise, we've made a lot of progress. There's still some work to be done in terms of democratizing access to data, and then looking at business models, right? Like one of the cliche statements, I truly believe that these technology innovations are rarely sustainable unless they are complemented with business model transformations as well, right? And that business model part is still fairly nascent. And if I think about this decade, if we on top of the sensor architectures and these tons of data that we collect, and by the way, we've been learning a lot which data to collect and which one is probably not that essential. But on top of that, if we mature the business models and these types of ecosystem approaches to data and use case building, then the sky is the limit. Then we can really make amazing experiences happen for us and in cities.
Yeah, 100%. And what about you writing with Forbes? What else are you doing?
Yeah, so I started, I've been writing for Forbes Tech Council for a while, initially around IoT, so basically bringing up the use cases. I've also been writing about this concept called co-economy. So basically what we discussed, that on top of the technology, you need to build these ecosystems and how to do it right, which is also tricky. At some point, a couple of years ago, everybody wanted to have a platform. If you remember, GE wanted a platform. Every company wanted a platform, right? And there was IoT ecosystem was littered with companies that wanted to be platform companies. But and it turned out that the customers don't buy platforms, they buy useful solutions, right? And so start from there rather than from the platforms. But now, I was trying to sort of talk about how to stitch these ecosystems in the right way. especially for more traditional companies, the traditionally, you know, industrial companies, most of them come from this sort of background of proud engineering, let's build everything in-house and everything is proprietary, into now this world of open data, open interfaces, open ecosystems. How do you go through that journey? So that was sort of this one of these key enablers that I was writing about a couple of years ago. And now I'm sort of writing about this tool set that I mentioned earlier, which is now having been at Kone for 4 years and experiencing working with my amazing colleagues here, how do we together accelerate the transformation of Kone, which would be we working on now, but also you know, there are hundreds and thousands of companies like Kone that also are at different stages of this transformation. So what are the best examples and lessons learned how to do it well? So I'm writing about sort of the change agent tool set and what worked for me at least and what didn't. You know, it's one of the funny things, like for in each of these transformational journeys that I've gone through, I create this list of lessons learned and mistakes and things I would have done differently. And and I try to avoid mistakes, but I make plenty of them every single time. Like this list, I'm not going to share it, but this list is over 100 items now for me at Kone, right? And when I think about some of the kind of descriptors against some of these mistakes or things I would have done differently, a lot of them come to follow your gut, right? So you tend to quite often sort of self-limit yourself for lots of reasons. And like, all right, I knew already that we needed to sort of structure, let's say, architecture organization differently, but maybe I waited too long with it for that, right? And I knew already that we needed to bring somebody with a new skill set, but maybe again, for lots of reasons, maybe we didn't act fast enough. And so, but it's actually quite useful to have this type of retrospective, so that hopefully next time you make fewer mistakes and you do it better.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed for that insight. And I would certainly encourage people who haven't already headed over to the Forbes articles that Maciek is writing, because your recent one, at the time of recording anyway, one of the more recent ones is 9 principles for change agents to break the rules. And it's a great article. And there's lots of things in there, humanizing the way cities are built, and lots of other interesting views from the Forbes council member, which is great to see that you're sharing your writing there, and some great insights. Thank you for sharing that in terms of the way that you're thinking. I suppose the other thing I want to ask you as we sort of come to the end of our time here today, Maciek, is that when people are looking at the future, when people are looking at how fast things are changing, you know, IoT, technology, artificial intelligence, you know, everybody's talking about ChatGPT 3, 4, yep. What else is, you know, 10 years down the road, is it quantum computing? Like, there's mind-blowing things hitting us every day. We've got instability, we've got political tensions, we've got financial turmoil. There's lots going on in this busy, communicated, connected world. But from when you look forward, when you think about planning, when you're looking at the next year ahead, the next couple of years, what's on your horizon? How do you go about that? What are you thinking about?
I'm extremely optimistic. I believe that you know, all these changes, there's a lot of discussion around whether these technology changes create doomsday scenarios for humanity. For me, I think they sort of accentuate how positive our lives and our impact will have, how positively they will evolve. I truly believe that these technologies are just our tools for us, right? And the more we can simplify our lives, we can make our lives easier. The more we can have time and focus on being creative, being innovative, the less mundane things we need to do or repetitive things we need to do, and the more discoveries we can focus on, the better it is for humanity. You know, in the next decade or two, we will live in a world where electricity is almost free, or actually free, where data processing is almost free, or actually free, where we can basically get as much data as we want to and process it, basically for a fraction of the cost it is today. And in this world of free electricity, abundant data, just think about what's possible when we can potentially end world hunger, and we can turn Sahara into thriving fields, and all kinds of things will become possible. So I'm really, really optimistic, because even though we've been going through amazing couple of decades of innovation from this physical and digital perspective, we're just getting started, and the world will be amazing. And I just hope to continue to go on this journey and dream and turn dreams into reality.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And look, the very last thing I'm going to say is I wanted to thank you, because for people watching or listening, something that I've been involved in for quite a number of years now, since I originally set it up, I suppose, is the Think Global Forum. And it's a global think tank. We bring together people from various industries all around the world for in-person discussions. We have sort of mini conferences, we have boardroom sessions, and we really talk about the future challenges and opportunities. And they're very, very well regarded. We have some excellent people that join us on these, and we've done them all throughout the US, all throughout Europe. We were very recently in, pandemic aside, Amsterdam. The very one we've done literally in the last few months was in Berlin, which was a great experience. But you also helped out very recently with the Think Global Awards, which is something that came out of that Think Global Forum think tank. And it was really a way of us recognizing individuals and corporations around the world that do think globally. And we have various categories, from startup to huge enterprises, to nonprofits, to communities. And I wanted to thank you for the help that you give us this year in joining our judging panel. So thank you so much indeed. I hope it was a good experience. We've only recently announced the shortlist at the time of recording.
Yeah, Simon, thank you so much for including me this year. And I hope to be involved in the future as well. I have to say, I was really impressed during the judging process with both the quality and diversity of submissions, right? As you mentioned, it's a global award, and the entries ranged from, you know, people doing, you know, translation in one corner of the world to you know, helping underprivileged people or people with disabilities in another corner of the world. And I think the beauty of these awards, of course, is to recognize these individuals or organizations or corporations. But I would say even more importantly, it is to leverage best practices, because you know, most of these examples can be leveraged, can be scaled across the globe, and we're basically learning together. So it's a great initiative, and thank you so much for allowing me to be part of that.
Well, thank you. It's great that you were able to join us on this year's awards, because it's 6 years now, which is incredible to believe, mm-hmm. that we've been recognizing individuals and communities and corporations worldwide for over 6 years now. So thank you. Well, I think that brings us nicely to the end of our time together today, Maciek. I want to thank you very much indeed for joining me here on Vista Talks. And I want to thank everybody who's been watching or listening to this episode. And I hope that people will join me back here for some more interesting topics with interesting people from all around the world. So thank you so much indeed, Maciek. It's been great to spend time with you today.
Thank you so much, Simon. It was fun.